You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Fans Only is back here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This is Locked On Kings, and the Kings fans are taking over. This is the third time we've done this here on the Locked On Kings podcast, where we invite you, listeners of the podcast and diehard fans of the Sacramento Kings, to take over the airwaves, to come on, share your stories of how you became a Kings fan, share your takes and your thoughts on this current Kings team, the future, the past. All of it is fair game. I look forward to doing these every other month or so when we're able to schedule them and get them out. This is the third one that we've ever done here on Locked On Kings. I enjoy doing them so much. We definitely will do more in the future, and I think you will enjoy hearing from three very awesome, very loyal Kings fans here today. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here on the Locked On Kings podcast. If you are new, this is not something we normally do, but I try and make the extra effort to make sure that Kings fans and listeners to this podcast have a platform for their voice to be heard as well as mine. I'm from Sports 1140 KGTK. That's the flagship radio station of the Kings in Sacramento. I work there as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter. Locked On Kings is your hub for Kings coverage and conversation all season, during the off-season, during the summertime, the draft, free agency, playoffs, all of it. We are always here year-round for you, and we try and be on every single weekday in bite-sized formats. This podcast is going to be a little bit on the longer side because I make sure to give as much time as possible to my guests here so that they can really get their voice heard, share their thoughts, and I don't want it to be rushed and only to be five-minute blurbs where I ask two questions and then cut them off. I make sure to give them as much time as I can, and then hopefully I've gotten great feedback on the first two episodes. I'm expecting more of the same here. You Kings fans certainly seem to enjoy hearing from your fellow fan, and it's something that it's easy for me. I just get to sit back, ask the questions, and listen to you guys take over the show and be the stars of the show. So it's something I look forward to doing every single time that I'm able to do it. You're going to hear from three great fans today: Ryan, Miles, and Troy. All of them very different in their Kings backgrounds, how they became fans of the team. They have very different opinions on how this Kings team should be run, what the Kings should do this summer, their expectations for this team at the start of the season. So you're getting a very well-rounded group of Kings fans here today, and I'm very excited to share them with you. So without any further ado, enjoy hearing from Ryan, Miles, and Troy here as the fans take over the Locked On Kings podcast. Happy to kick off the Fans Only podcast, the third Fans Only podcast, with my man Ryan Dunlay. You can find him on LinkedIn. He is a very dedicated Sacramento Kings fan, also a dedicated listener to the Locked On Kings podcast. Very excited to start episode number three of Fans Only with him. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time, appearing on the podcast. Thank you for being a loyal listener to the podcast. I'm excited to have you on.
Oh, my pleasure, my honor. Thanks for having me.
Before we dive into specific questions that I want to ask you about the team this year and where they're headed and your expectations, how they've maybe shifted from the start of this year to today, I'm curious your backstory of how you became a fan of the Sacramento Kings.
Well, it was a real roundabout way to get to the Kings. I grew up all around the Midwest, Iowa, Nebraska, Oklahoma City, but that was way before they had the Thunder. So, coming up, I became a fan of the game very small. And actually, the first team I ever cheered for was the Utah Jazz. Reason being, everyone else was just a Lakers fan or a Celtics fan in the 80s in the Midwest, and I kind of, didn't want to jump on the bandwagon quite like that. But, in 2004, after my wife and I had our second kiddo, we moved out to Sacramento to be near her folks, and the energy of the team was undeniable immediately. And for a while there, I thought I'd root for both teams, even though there was the Western Conference conflict in place there. But really, like I said, just being around Kings fans, being around the energy associated with the team, it was undeniable. Kind of felt it coming, and then once the team was looking at, maybe possibly moving out of the area, and then you start, letting the reality of that situation sink in. You think about, what's going to happen to Natomas if they leave, what's going to happen to all these folks and families if the jobs go away. And so all of a sudden, light kind of went off as far as the whole reason why we root for the home team. So at that point, I was all in on the Kings.
Yeah, that seems to be a consistent theme, Ryan, is the team being so community-driven, the fact that Sacramento, for the most part, is a one-sport town. Now they have the Sacramento Republic FC. They've had the Sacramento Rivercats for a long time, but the Kings being the only professional franchise down here, they tend to latch on and grab the hearts of new citizens and then longtime Sacramentans alike. It's interesting, though, so you came in right after or towards the end of the glory years. A lot of people that I have on tell me, oh, I became a fan in the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Chris Webber, Mike Bibby, Doug Christie-led teams were making pushes for winning NBA championships. Was it difficult for you? So you come to Sacramento, you become a supporter of the team, buy into that energy, and then 2-3 years later, they start to falter and begin this long playoff drought that we're still in. Was it difficult through you through that time, or were you already an established Kings fan and in it through the long run?
Well, you know, actually, it made it better. You know, no one can accuse me of jumping on the bandwagon. We got to town, just after the glory years there. And really, you know, it was almost better that way. Because, remember, me coming up, as a Jazz fan, the Kings retired Stockton, and that I can remember that, just absolutely breaking me at the time. And so really, when we moved out to Sac, I was like, gosh, I'm going to be in the same city as this team that, up until now, I've, really disliked. But no, once the roster turned over pretty quick, and so all of those associations just kind of fell by the wayside. But I really wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a very nice ride, just watching this team gradually rise up.
I've been very open on this podcast talking about my coping mechanism to get me through the last 12-plus years, and a lot of it has to do with optimism. What has it been about this team that has carried you through? You mentioned the relocation saga. I'm sure that rekindled a flame for a lot of people that maybe was close to burning out with the amount of struggles that this team has had. But is there anything specifically to the team, basketball-wise, the fan base, that really kept you around through it all?
Well, I mean, just us having the team, after a while there, when you think, gosh, what's going to happen to Sac if the Kings leave? At that point, the winning percentage didn't bother me any, as long as I knew that they were going to be here, we'd at least have a chance to compete against, the best in the world. That carried me for quite a while. But then, once Fox came to town, and now that we have a point guard, a leader, there's, I love everything about the guy. So I think that'll carry me going forward for sure.
Were you involved in any of the Here We Stay night or the movement or any of the grassroots efforts that all the fans gathered together to be a part of to keep the team here?
No, I did not attend any of those in person, unfortunately. Shame on me.
Oh, well, no problem. You're still as loud of a... I was in college at the time, so I could barely afford to be able to go, and I'd manage to buddies and I would be able to scratch and claw a few pennies and dollars here and there to be able to attend. But it's more than just people coming to the arena, and I think that's even more set in stone now here today with the fact that the Golden One Center is state of the art. It's gorgeous, and there's only so many seats inside it, and the population of Sacramento continues to grow and grow. But one of the things that I think is great about this organization, Ryan, and I'm wondering if you feel the same, is the fact that the Kings do a good job reaching people that aren't always in the seats or aren't just season ticket holders. They do a good job connecting to the fans at home.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, gosh, Kings Twitter alone, that is just a fantastic community. Plenty of great conversations to have out there. But no, yes, it seems like anywhere you go in Sac, you're going to feel the energy someplace. And yes, it's not uncommon to run into other fans and people passionate.
It was difficult for many to deal with that that long playoff drought, and we might not see an end of it this year, but this year overall I think has been an absolute blast for most, if not all, Sacramento Kings fans. Coming into this season, Ryan, what were your expectations? What were you wanting to see out of this Kings team, and how much have they just blown those out of the water, if any?
Well, I mentioned Fox earlier. Coming into this season, it was just as long as I could still feel hopeful about the franchise. I felt that hope last year. You could kind of see, this team could really be something. And then for them to, make a bit of a breakthrough this year, that's only makes the hope burn that much brighter. Like I said, it's just seeing the roster, develop. I'm so young. So much potential there. That there's no reason to think that we couldn't make a similar breakthrough next year. So I'm very, very excited about our team.
There's no such thing really as moral victories, but after the long playoff drought that we've dealt with, it's easier for fans to deal with slow improvement rather than no improvement at all, which is something that we've suffered for quite a while. The fact that this team is 500 at this point in early March, is playing competitive games at this point in early March, and is still technically in the playoff race. To you, is that a dream come true reason to throw a parade, or are you just hungry for a little bit more now?
Oh, you know, gosh, this year was, you know, honestly beyond my expectations. I mean, I thought it'd take us, you know, a little bit longer to get to where we were. So to be sitting at 500, well, and gosh, just think. I mean, we're watching the Kings play, you know, relevant games in February and March, you know, and it's been a little while since we've had that excitement this deep into the season. So no, I'm very thankful. You know, I'm very satisfied as a fan. We're on the right track.
Obviously, a lot comes down to what the Kings end up doing this summer. I think it's going to be a very interesting and fun summer to follow. But based off of how the team has played this year, and we don't yet know how they are going to finish, if they're going to make the playoffs or not. But assuming they don't, are you going into next season with the expectation that they will make the playoffs and you will be disappointed if they don't?
You know, I do expect that we'll break through. Yeah, I'll be disappointed if we don't. And to be honest, I'm a little bit disappointed that, you know, we might not be there this year, despite it being, you know, teased so much throughout the year. So, yeah, you know, I would be. You know, I want the best for our guys. I want them to experience success. I think, I'm sure that the fan base is salivating for another playoff appearance. I want that for everybody. But at the same time, you know, if anything, you know, being a Kings fan has taught me to be patient. And, I'll continue to be patient. As long as we've got a team to root for, I'm going to be happy.
Has the front office done enough over the last couple of years to earn your unquestioning support and your confidence in them to have a potentially lucrative summer and make the right moves to get this team to that next level?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. I love the job that Vlade's done, and I kind of love the honesty. You know, I know there's a couple of press conferences where maybe you could argue, he didn't say quite the right thing,
yeah.
But I mean, he's being honest with us. And so now you just see, I think, looking back, we undoubtedly won the Boogie Cousins trade. I love the additions that he's made this year. I absolutely love Harrison Barnes and what he's done for the team defensively. So yeah, I think he's done a great job. I think he should have earned all of our trust by now.
Again, it's all a hypothetical conversation, but I started talking about it on yesterday's podcast, Monday's podcast, about potential free agency targets for the Kings. And again, it's really early. It depends on who they re-sign, if they bring back Harrison Barnes, everything they still have to work out. But are there any names out there that realistically you think the Kings could go out and get that you would love to see here in Sacramento?
Well, gosh, hold on. Let me put on my thinking cap here real quick. My wife and I are both Creighton alums, and so, geez, idea of if any way we could get Korver, McDermott, or Tolliver back in town, that sure would be ideal. Always love that. If we're thinking a little bit larger than that, boy, wouldn't it be nice to see KD come up a little bit up north? Maybe be the centerpiece of a title team. Wouldn't that be nice?
It certainly would be something. And what one of the things that's been cool this year, as unlikely as I believe KD might come, fingers crossed, you never know, stranger things have happened. But one of the things that I appreciate is we've heard it from KD and we've heard it from stars all over the NBA this year that Sacramento is finally starting to come back on the map as a free agency destination because of what the young core has done. To you, who puts a lot of pride in this organization, in this team, and then in those players on the floor, what does it mean to you to hear those kind of ringing endorsements from other NBA stars?
Oh, just reiterates the fact that, the culture's changed. We're doing the right things. We're building a good reputation throughout the league.
And last thing for you, Ryan, I'm so thankful that you were able to take the time here to come on the podcast. I'm curious about the remainder of this season for you. I know you said a little bit earlier you'd be disappointed if the Kings didn't make it. I think we would all be disappointed. Anybody that's saying they wouldn't be disappointed would be lying. I've been able to work my way through it by saying, the Kings are playing with house money at this point. Nobody expected them to be there. If they make it, fantastic. If they don't, well. But what is it that you're really going to be paying attention to, and what is the bottom line for you of, they didn't make it, but I'm still very, very pleased. Is there a win total in there for you?
You know, not so much a win total. I like to pay real close attention to how the guys react after games, and even more so after the season. You know, I think if they can just, you know, remain positive, take the good from the season, let the disappointment roll off the back, if there is any, you know, because we don't know how this is going to shake out. But like I said, as long as, you know, they're keeping a good attitude and saying the right things when the camera's in their face, I will be very pleased.
That is Ryan Dunlay, diehard Sacramento Kings fan, listener to the Locked On Kings podcast. Ryan, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on here, this Fans Only episode, and for your support of this podcast. It truly means the world to me. It's a pleasure to be able to speak with you and to hear your story, so thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Keep up the great work.
Moving right along with the third episode of the Fans Only podcast here on Locked On Kings, and I'm looking forward to chatting with this guy, Miles Chong. He's been a longtime listener to the Locked On Kings podcast, but even more of a longtime fan of the Sacramento Kings, and he's just recently celebrated a birthday on March 7th, so we're happy to have the birthday boy here on the Locked On Kings podcast. You can find Miles on Instagram, me_less on Instagram, so be sure to give him a follow. I'm sure there's plenty of pictures of him in Kings gear or at Kings games there for you to check out. Miles, thank you so much for taking the time to come here on the Locked On Kings podcast. Thank you for being a listener to the podcast, and happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So let's start with a little bit of your backstory of how you became a Kings fan. I'm always fascinated to hear, because everybody comes to teams in different ways, whether you're born into it or raised into it via family, if you moved to Sacramento and just found out the team was here. How did you become connected to this franchise?
Sure. So I actually was born in the Philippines. Filipinos are huge basketball fans, notoriously. And when we moved to the States, I was about one. We moved to California, chose the Bay Area as home. And when I started watching basketball, that's when the Kings were good. We had Mike Bibby, Peja, Brad Miller, Chris Webber. You know, we had a good squad. So I just fell in love with that team. Peja Stojakovic is my favorite player of all time. Ironically enough, I was born into a family who are all Warriors fans. So back then, they were all the Warriors team was not great. And so I chose the Kings as my team. You know, when we started declining and the Warriors started rising, I never wanted to jump on the bandwagon, as I saw many Kings fans do, decided to weather the storm. And, you know, it seems like in the most recent years, it's starting to pay off. So it's been an interesting journey living in the Bay Area and watching all these Warriors fans get hyped up about their team. And now I can definitely say that I'm, you know, proud of the product and the brand that the Kings have in the most recent years. That's not to say that I haven't been a fan in the past. You know, I was a big fan of Boogie Cousins, still a big fan, even though he's on the Warriors. And you have a couple signed jerseys from him as well. So, you know, it really just started with a brand of basketball that I loved, and I never wanted to be a bandwagon fan after that. So I just stayed loyal, even though I never lived in Sacramento. I'll take typically the Amtrak train or just drive up to Sacramento to watch games every now and then. But I do have a league pass, so, you know, I'm watching games whenever I can.
Well, good for you, man, and I'm proud of you for not jumping ship to the Warriors. I'm sure it was tempting with the amount of family that's down there, but at least they're enjoying themselves too, as frustrating as it might be as Sacramento Kings fans, and I'm sure with them being, or the Warriors being in your backyard, you can definitely understand this more than I can, but it's also good to have Northern California basketball prominent right now, and hopefully we'll get to a point either in the near future or maybe next year, this year, who knows, where the Kings and Warriors are both good and in the playoffs at the same time, because that's never happened before, which is incredible and crazy to think about. But you brought up your background actually moving here from the Philippines, and you said something that gained my attention. You said that basketball is huge in the Philippines, and I've been fascinated by the fact that the NBA is growing every single day, seemingly, as a global game. Now professional games and tours are happening all over the world during the summertime and during the off season. So can you speak a little bit about what is it about basketball that they love so much in the Philippines, and how big is it truly there?
Sure. You know, I think basketball itself is one of those sports where all you need is a piece of wood and a basket, really.
Right.
And, you know, I think because of that, it's really easy to set up your own makeshift basketball hoop. And, you know, we always played whenever I visited. I'd play with family, and there was always just a fascination with the NBA game. Mm. They do have their own basketball association in the Philippines. So, you know, Filipinos just love it in general. I believe out of all of the countries, I don't know if they have the second or the third largest NBA team store, but
wow.
They do have a large team store in the Philippines as well. And I think it all stems from just the excitement of the game. There are plenty of teams to follow. You know, wearing jerseys is pretty common in the Philippines. It is really hot all the time, so you'll always see someone wearing jerseys. And you can pretty much buy a jersey anywhere that you walk by. So, you know, growing up, whenever we went back home, that's when actually the Suns were good. And I remember buying a Steve Nash jersey mm-hmm. when I was in the Philippines, and everyone would comment everywhere we walked by, like, oh, where'd you get that jersey? You know, I definitely want to get a Suns jersey too. You know, so I think there was just an appreciation across all 30 teams. No one ever looked at it like, oh, you know, only the big markets were the teams that they would follow. I think there was an appreciation for the whole sport in general.
How accessible is the NBA there? You mentioned the team store, which is actually fantastic. I did not know that, and that's incredible. And I'm glad that the NBA also has a little bit of a fashion sense or a fashion intrigue there in the Philippines. But in terms of accessibility, watching the games, being able to follow the NBA closely, is it easier there than one might think?
I mean, it requires some dedication, I guess, because the time difference.
Right.
But I mean, I'd be watching games regardless, whether it would be at night or in the morning. You know, you'd wake up and there would be a game on. I think with games being broadcasted on League Pass, it's much easier nowadays. Back then, you know, it was just ESPN or ABC or, you know, frankly, whatever you could get ripping a stream online. But that it's not as accessible as it is here, of course, but there are definitely ways to, you know, watch your favorite team while you're there.
What was it about Peja Stojakovic that really captivated you as a young fan?
Shooting, you know, lights out shooting. He had those back-to-back three-point contest wins. And yeah, I think it was just something to look forward to. I just remember being a little kid and I had a basketball hoop in my backyard and I would just shoot threes. So before, you know, there was a Steph Curry, before
yeah.
there was, you know, a Klay Thompson, I think for me, it was just, you know, a guy that could catch and shoot. And I think for me, the favorite play that I've ever seen Peja make was that one where he passed it behind the back from over half court.
Yep.
And that assist will always be it's seared into my memory. So it was just a fun brand of basketball. And so it's great to see him in the role that he's in now in the front office. And I really like how we've kind of integrated the old with the new, you know, having Vlade and Peja and, you know, even having Doug Christie as a color analyst. I think it kind of ties everything together. And I think that speaks to how Sacramento is as a basketball community. You know, it really is a community. I think I go to Warriors games, you know, more often than not because I live in San Francisco. And actually, Klay Thompson even said this the other day, you know, I want our fans to stand up and get excited when they cheer. I look at Sacramento basketball as a community that's always been supportive of their team through the highs and the lows, through the peaks and the valleys. And that started with, for me at least, you know, I'm 25, so for me that started with the Peja Stojakovic era. And, you know, the fans have always just been so supportive of the team. And I think that started with them, and it's continued on, you know, whether it be on the court or in the front office.
Very well said, Miles. I am young like you. I'm 24 years old, so I know exactly what you're talking about in terms of growing up and following this Kings team. I remember specifically with Peja Stojakovic, I have one memory always implanted in my brain when I think of him, but his corner three-pointer that he would always shoot, I just remember being a young kid always expecting that, or actually really knowing that it was going to go in because that was just his shot. But I remember attending a game as a kid, and it was when Vlade hit. It was either the first three of the season, or I think it might have been one of the first threes of his career. Peja Stojakovic actually ran and jumped into his arms as they were making their way down the floor. So that's a Peja memory that sticks with me. But I 100% agree with you. While you don't necessarily want to run your organization by just relying on the past, which some could say the Kings have done, bringing Peja, Vlade, Bobby Jackson, Doug Christie back in specific roles, where they're actually not just figureheads, they are helping the team, and I can attest to that. Peja Stojakovic, what he does in the front office with Vlade, they do actually do things and make a difference. Bobby Jackson on the coaching staff, Doug Christie on the commentary side of things. It's cool to see those guys come back and actually make an impact on this franchise. When you do travel up, Miles, to Sacramento to come to the Golden 1 Center, I'm curious, the first time you were able to walk into that building, one thing that I like about Oracle is it does have that stage lighting appeal to it. I really do enjoy Oracle Arena. Actually, my great uncle helped design Oracle Arena, so I have a little bit of a connection to it. But I grew up a diehard fan of Arco Arena. I still consider it my second home, even though it's just out there not being used right now. But I remember for me walking inside the Golden 1 Center for the first time, just my breath being taken away. I'm curious what that was like for you coming from the Bay Area and going into the G1C for the first time.
Actually, you know, that was also my first time in Old Sac, in that area. So I didn't know what to expect. It was easy enough to just take the Amtrak because the station is there. But walking into the arena, I was like, wow. The first thing I noticed was the gigantic screen up top. And then, you know, I went a little bit early. We scoped out the different restaurants. So we noticed, you know, the variety of food and, of course, the Sierra Nevada Draft House at the top. It seemed otherworldly compared to Arco or Sleep Train, yeah, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I think for me, I was excited to see, you know, that was before there was a real tangible pivot of us, ascending to where we are now. But I thought in my mind, okay, well, new arena, and it seems like everyone here is really hyped up to be in this arena. It made me even more energized to be there. And I was hoping that would usher in a new brand of basketball, and it did. So, I don't know if it's the combination of the arena, but I think it really helped set the tone for us moving forward.
Well, thanks to you not being a Fairweather fan, you really could enjoy this season to the max and the turnaround that this team has been undergoing to the max this season. I'm curious, what was it like for you and what has this year been like for you as a Kings fan that lives in the Bay Area that has to deal with, I'm sure, the flack that you take from Warriors fans in there all the time? For this team to make the turnaround that it's had and the growth that we've seen over the course of this season, what has that been like for you as a fan?
It's been amazing. I think I actually have had discussions with many of my friends here who are Warriors fans, and they've given me crap around the years, but most recently the discussions have pivoted to, you know, these young Kings look like the young Warriors back, yeah, you know, just a few years ago. The backcourt of Fox and Buddy has that kind of scary, energetic, get to the basket with your handles and still make a shot from the outside kind of game that Stephen Clay had. But I think there's, you know, maybe I'm pushing my buttons a little too much here, but I think there might be a little bit more upside for us, being that we also have a promising front court. I watch Harry Giles and Marvin Bagley play. You know, I'm hoping Bagley comes back. And by the way, I think we would have won last night's game if Bagley was in the game.
But I agree.
I think, you know, I look at the upside of Giles and Bagley, and I'm like, man, we have a front court that the Warriors didn't even have back then. So I'm excited to watch, you know, what Fox is 21, Bagley's 20, I think, or 19, and Giles is about the same thing. So, you know, them growing up together is going to be fun. We've got Buddy, who's come out and said he's 26, so he's kind of approaching his prime. So, you know, and I think Buddy is a shooter. You know, shooters last longer in the league anyways. Yep. He's going to, you know, be around on this team for a while now. I think that Harrison Barnes addition obviously makes me think of the Warriors even more so. So I think there's a lot of promise. I think there's a lot more respect, and I don't think this year especially any of my Warriors friends have given me crap about anything, because they recognize and respect what we've done. And I think, you know, going through what we went through over the past dozen years, they know that I'm a diehard Kings fan, and they know I haven't jumped ship yet, and there's no way I'm jumping ship now. So it's been productive conversations, and I'm just more excited. And I was hoping to see a Kings Dubs first round series. Doesn't look like we're going to get that, and I'm completely fine with that. But, you know, I think if we got that, we would have gotten KD. So I was hoping we were going to do that.
I'm curious then. It's interesting you bring up the Kings Dubs potential opening series. I think a couple of Warrior fans that I actually interact with and work with here at the KHDK station in Sacramento, and we were having an off-air discussion about if the Warriors and the Kings were to open up in the first round, and all of them said the same thing, that they think the Warriors would prefer to take on a Utah Jazz or a Spurs or a Clippers over the Kings, even though the Warriors have beaten the Kings four times this season. All four games have been really, really close. And the Warriors, you know how deep they expect to go in the playoffs, expecting to make it and win another NBA championship, and they like to be well-rested by the time they make it to the finals. And the Kings certainly wouldn't allow them to really take it easy. But you mentioned that you wouldn't be disappointed or upset if the Kings don't make the playoffs this year. Do you still believe that there is a chance to maybe catch the Utah Jazz or catch the San Antonio Spurs? Or are you just happy to just sit back and enjoy the rest of it and allow what happens, happens?
You know, with how the Spurs are playing, they're on fire. You know, we can't catch the Clippers. I think with the way the Jazz are playing, I just don't see us catching up with what do we have, 18 games left?
Yeah.
I think the Spurs would be the most reasonable to try to catch, but after last night's loss, I've kind of come to the not conclusion, but, you know, that it's just a far shot. I just can't put my money against Greg Popovich. You know, that's a team where over the past dozen years where we've played poorly, Pop has been an example of what it is like to be a great coach and, you know, change with the style of the game. And so even though he's got two mid-range shooters in DeMar and in LaMarcus, I think, you know, he's made it work. I just don't see us catching up, and I think that's fine. I think for us, this season, we were supposed to get better. We were supposed to be a free agent destination that, you know, a destination where free agents said, hey, maybe we want to play with this young core. Yeah. You know, look at LeBron, who ended up playing over with the Lakers, that although he moved for outside of basketball reasons, you know, he had to look at that young core and said, okay, well, this is a team that, you know, I could at least build around or complement in a way. And I'm starting to see that. I think markets, and I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent here. This isn't the original question.
Sure.
But I think small markets are starting to be looked at by larger free agents because the NBA is so wide. And this ties back everything back to the Philippines comment, because, you know, it's so easy to get your brand out there that you don't need to be in an LA. You don't need to be in a New York. You don't need to be in a Chicago to get your brand out there. So I'm thinking for us moving forward, you know, free agents look at our roster and say, hey, this young, talented core is where I want to be a part of. I mean, who doesn't want to play in a run and gun type of environment? So sorry, that was a little bit of a tangent, but I think, you know, I'm just super excited to see what the future holds for us.
You are someone that I might need to bring back on the podcast another time when we have a little bit more time to go deeper into that conversation, because for the most part, I 100% agree with you. But unfortunately, running out of time here, so I want to end with this, Miles, and thank you so much for coming on and taking the time. This summer, regardless of if the Kings make the playoffs or not, we all expect this summer to be extremely important and potentially very lucrative for this Kings team. If I was to ask you the one thing at the top of your checklist, the one thing that you need to see the Kings do this summer, what would you say that is?
Need to do. I would say get a 3-and-D wing. Two things. 3-and-D wing and extend Bogey. I think he's in his last year, right? So I want to see Bogey on the team moving forward. And so those are my two checklist items.
Fantastic. I think we should also potentially add extending head coach Dave Yeager and in the process extending Vlade Divac as well. But, I mean, that's kind of off-the-court stuff that you would like to see this Kings team do, and I think we both agree that should the Kings do that and then focus back to the on-the-court stuff, that this summer could be potentially fantastic. Well, Miles, I mean what I say. I really would like to have you back on the podcast in the near future, maybe closer to the end of the season, to get into that discussion about free agency destination, because that's been something that's haunted the Kings and haunted Sacramento for a while, but something that might be changing with this young team playing so well, and then, like you said, with the globalization of the game. But until then, my man, thank you so much for taking the time. Again, happy birthday. Pleasure was all mine, really, to have you on, and thank you for being a listener to the Locked On Kings podcast.
Absolutely, Matt. Thanks for the time.
Wrapping up the Locked On Kings podcast, the third episode of Fans Only. It's been a fun episode so far, and I'm very excited to continue it and wrap it up with this guy, Troy Meza. He is a listener to the Locked On Kings podcast, a diehard Sacramento Kings fan, and he is someone that I've gone back and forth with a little bit on email from time to time, and I'm definitely excited to be able to speak with him in person and bring him here to the Locked On Kings podcast. Troy, thank you so much for not only listening to this podcast, but being an active member of the community, of course, being a diehard member of this Sacramento Kings fan base. It's a privilege to have you on.
Oh, thank you. I've been looking forward to being on the show for a while.
Absolutely. Well, the pleasure is really all mine, truly. But I'm curious, Troy. I always ask fans when we start here their stories about how they became fans of this Kings team. Is there anything unique with your story, or how did you become a supporter of this team?
Actually, I call myself pretty much a lifer hoops junkie. So I've literally, loved basketball even before the Kings moved here. So I am showing my age. I'm in my later 40s. So literally when you had to, like, go through 50 steps to record a VCR, I do remember, recording Lakers and Philadelphia 76ers and early 80s, really getting into watching those great teams and watching Magic and Larry and Julius Erving and just falling in love with the NBA. And then once the Kings came into town and started watching that team, the handful of games that are on, not like every game's on right now where you can watch every single game, but literally Gary Gerald, listening to him when the Kings games weren't on, I've been pretty much a hoops diehard. And ever since they came to town, a Kings diehard.
Well, right on, man. You can teach me a few things. Were you able to attend a few games at the old Arco Arena?
Yes, actually, a shout out to my good friends, their parents, the Lemonagers. They were season ticket holders from the very beginning, so I always got to go with my buddy as a teenager to the early 80s games, and probably four or five games a year we got to go and see the Kings. So yes, I was there from the very beginning.
See, I grew up with the second Arco Arena. I guess it's considered the main Arco Arena. I don't know. But I've always seen pictures and seen videos of just the crowds and the atmospheres at the old Arco. And that is something that has translated and carried through the years here in Sacramento. Can you tell me a little bit about what you experienced being a part of that atmosphere in that old building and the times that you were able to go?
Yeah, I think I only got to see one or two games, but it was very, very closed in and, like a barn, probably a more college atmosphere with about 10,000 people. So very close, very on top of the action. Really, really fun. Those are, I saw more games in the old Arco Arena, but did get to see a couple of games in the very first Arco Arena. I think that was only around for two seasons from what I remember.
Yeah.
Before they switched over to the main Arco.
And is there any game that you can point to through the course of you being a fan? It could be all the way back to from old Arco all the way to today. A game that you point to as this is the favorite Kings game or NBA game that I've ever attended and been able to watch live?
Attended or watched live? No. I think one of them that stands out really early on is an old Washington game. It was just a no-nonsense game. And I got to live the dream that what you're doing, Matt, because I probably should have done that and done a communications major, because we were just sitting there in the game and they were running some kind of promotion years ago. We got to go into a little area and broadcast the game. So got to go. That was probably one of my early memorable experiences, where I got to go and be a commentator and pretend like I was the great Napier and all the great announcers that I've loved over the years.
Well, that's pretty incredible, and that's an awesome thing. They ought to do that more. I think that would open
the door. They should. It was really fun.
That would definitely open the door a lot to people discovering how much fun this really is and being able to just share their voice and share their love of the Kings or the NBA in general. You said you're a hoops junkie, and you said you were long before the Kings came here. Now, while I expect the Kings to be the number one team for anybody listening to this podcast, and especially someone that's featured on Fans Only, I do understand and respect fans that watch basketball just for the sake of basketball and will pay attention to the best teams just because they're watching NBA history. Over the years, have there been specific teams or specific players that you've liked to watch that have helped grow that basketball fandom?
Oh, I mean, really kind of cutting my teeth on the 80s basketball. My favorite early team that I gravitated towards, Julius Erving was my favorite player. And then watching the Philadelphia 76ers in 1983, go out and sweep the Lakers, and that team is one and only championship team, but probably one of the most dominant performances against a legendary Lakers team that I've ever seen. So watching that, being able to watch, you know, the Larry Bird and Magic Johnson days of those Lakers and Celtics, and for any hoops diehard junkie that hasn't seen the documentaries, I think there's one on HBO, there's another one, I can't remember what other outlet was, there's been some really good documentaries, and it just takes you back to the time in the 80s where those teams were so good, so dominant, so, you know, watching Kevin McHale do low post moves, that's just way beyond some of the greatest things that you don't see anymore. You don't see that kind of talent, that kind of play from what Larry did. It's really been amazing. So just that whole era of the 80s, I just fell in love, and it's never stopped.
Do you have any kind of horse in the race or opinion when it comes to the argument between old school NBA and modern NBA? A lot of people say the NBA today is better because of the amount of three-point shooting, the speed of the game, the star power. But of course, there are many that say old school was better with the physicality of the game. It was more of a real man sport type thing. Do you lean any way or another on that debate?
No, I think sports always changes in general. And, you know, look at the NFL. If you look at the NFL, it's changed where it's much more open. You can't do as much grabbing. It just the rules have changed the eras so much. But if you're telling me that Lakers team or that Boston team couldn't adapt to today's style, Forget about it. Of course they could. They would be a dominant team just like they were back then, because talent will eventually win out. They'll realize the rules. They'll realize the best strategies to play. So, no, it's hard. You can't really compare eras. I mean, I do miss some of the Bruisers, some of the back in the 90s and early 2000s, like the Indiana guys. And if you remember, that was kind of like a golden era of power forwards when the Chris Webber days were going on.
Yep.
You had, you know, you're watching a lot more physical, low post, tough guy play with Karl Malone and Webber and Duncan and Kevin Garnett and the Indiana Davis boys. I mean, those guys were really good, but that's the way the game was played. They were physical. They were tough. You had to have tough guys. Even a little bit before that, one of my favorite Kings teams, watching Brian Grant and Michael the Animal Smith just go out and battle and show toughness. And it's just a different game. It's more of a slug it out type of game than today's kind of completely open, can't do as much grabbing and touching and banging down there. Just different styles. The way that the rules have really changed it, changed the players that come in, changed who could be dominant. I don't know if some of those big guys could be as dominant in today's game. So it's really how it's evolved over the years.
I remember growing up and being infatuated, even though I wasn't a fan of the team because I was so involved with the Sacramento Kings as a kid, but I remember being infatuated and interested in the Bad Boy Pistons and how physical that team was with both Ben and Rasheed Wallace, Tayshaun Prince, Rich Hamilton, Chauncey Billups, teams like that that I would love to see in today's NBA, because I agree with you. I believe they would adapt, but the physicality would catch some teams by surprise, and it would be fun to see a Rasheed versus a Draymond Green or something like that in the modern era. But if I was to ask you to pick a player from the 80s, that decade of basketball that you loved, and put them and plug them into the NBA today, just to see them watch and play in this style. Is there a name that jumps to mind immediately?
Just because of his shooting ability, I would say Larry Bird.
Yep.
He definitely, you know, he was the most feared shooter in the time. And I actually make the comparison, you know, Larry wasn't the most athletic guy in the world, but he was super duper skilled. For every move that you had, he had a counter move and he'd shoot the lights out at any time. And I don't hear people make this comparison, but I put him, I compare him to Steph Curry right now. Mm. Because Curry is not the most athletic guy out on the court or that dominant. But because he's such a feared shooter and he's got every single trick in the book, he's a good passer, he'll make the right play all the time. That's why, to me, I think Larry would be, he would really excel in this era.
Is there a player on the Sacramento Kings roster currently that you think would be, would have fit well or would have excelled or succeeded back in the 80s? Or is it a little just too soft today with some of these kids?
No, I don't think they're too soft. I think they could play. To me, Harry Giles shows a pretty much a toughness where I could see him being, you know, getting stronger, adding a little bit more muscle, and he's got that sort of nasty in him where I think he'd fit very well in the 80s for sure, because no guy is going to go out there and, you know, out-dominate him and outwork him. He reminds me of a player back there where he definitely could have fit into any era where it was a tougher, more physical kind of game.
What were your expectations for this Kings team coming into the season, Troy? Was it more leaning on the doom and gloom or just excited to see the young guys play, or did you have expectations of them being as successful as they are here today? Where were you at when the opening day came around?
I think just waiting to see what they could put together, see another year from De'Aaron Fox, seeing what Bagley could do. I know a lot of people wanted Doncic. I was probably in that camp as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just seeing what the young guys, if they could take a step forward. I loved Buddy. I didn't think Buddy, I wanted to see him get more playing time. And I think the injury to Bogdanović really accelerated that growth, and he got a full-time starting job. So I didn't have high expectations. I didn't know if they'd be ready to make that leap, especially because the Western Conference is so tough,
yeah,
and so many good veteran squads out there that you're going to have to leapfrog over. So, no, I probably thought they'd get, you know, maybe low 30s kind of wins. But I didn't think they'd be, you know, hovering around a 500 team all the way here. I knew it was a young team. It was part of a rebuild. So I was just waiting to see the growth and waiting to see what people have added to their games and where we could go. And excited to see Harry Giles, too, because, you know, he was a big unknown and didn't get to play last year. So you had a lot of young players. You just didn't know what you had yet.
I was
looking forward to it, but I think as a Kings fan that's had 12 years of, you know, losing,
yeah,
you're hoping for a good glimmer of hope that they're making progress in the right direction.
I'm glad you brought up the Western Conference and the difficulty of the West. As long as I can remember, it's been quite a while, and it's not a biased thing to say. It's just proven the West has had consistently more talent, and it's been a more difficult conference than the East has. That being said, I've, for the most part, still been a fan of the current playoff system, 8 from the East, 8 from the West going at it, and then you have the best from the West and the East matching up, although I know a lot of people now are interested in exploring the idea of 1 through 16 records, regardless of what conference you're in. The best 16 teams make it, and they do almost tournament bracket style, similar to the NCAA and their national tournaments. But the Kings this year might end up being, and it looks like they are going to be, the bubble team in the Western Conference, the team that just misses out, that plug them into the East, they would make it. Where are you at in that debate, Troy? Do you have an opinion at all? Would you like to see, are you okay with the playoff system staying this way and the Kings just missing out, or would you like to see change?
For me, as a longtime Hoops fan, I'm not a traditionalist like that. I believe if we went to a 1-16 system, the Kings would be in the conversation for the playoffs right now instead of the outside looking in the Western Conference standings. So, to me, I think I would be really excited about that, even as a longtime fan, to see a 1-16 system where it just creates so much more opportunity, where a lot of times the better teams in the West have all, you know, beaten each other to a pulp, and the East has been a weaker conference. So, I think it would kind of force the East to try a little harder and not just get into the playoffs with a really subpar team for those last, you know, couple of spots in the East. I would love to see a system like that where it's 1-16. I think it would make the playoffs so much more refreshing, because a lot of times you've seen these guys beat up on each other year after year.
Yeah.
in the Western and Eastern Conference. So I'd be a big supporter of that. I know they'd have to change the schedule. The regular season schedule would have to change for fairness, and that's a lot more travel and miles and wear and tear. So I get it. That's a tough one, but I would like to see that.
Well, you sound very open-minded about the NBA adapting, which is something that's good. And a lot of people, quite frankly, just don't have that open-mindedness when it comes to sports. They like staying consistent with what they know. And I'm sure there are a lot of teams in the 6th, 7th, 8th place range in the East that are hoping that the conference system stays the same so that they can hover below 500 and still make it to the playoffs every single year. A lot of it depends, Troy, on what the Kings do this summer, and there's so much up in the air. It also depends on injuries and things like that. But let's assume the Kings miss the playoffs but finish the season at or just above 500. How would your expectations change going into next year? Are you approaching the summer saying, okay, now in order for me to be satisfied, this team needs to be a playoff team by this point next season?
Oh, I think absolutely. I think you've proven you're right on the bubble. And I think you've proven, you know, with all these tough losses against really top teams, this team is right there. I think they could use another piece or two, maybe to inject some life in there. But I'm of the opinion, just keep the core as much as you can together. Don't break that up because you got a good thing going. Right now, it's I think Doug talks about it a lot on his broadcast. You know, it's the little things. They need to take that step up and do the little things that really good teams do, you know, chances for, you know, rebounds. And I know a lot of guys get on Willie for the rebounds, but I think it's really also a team-wide aspect. Those are little things, you know, missing crucial rebounds, bad turnovers, forcing shots, you know, late in games. A lot of the things that have plagued them over this last really tough stretch. I think those are the things. You keep that core together. They keep getting experience. They keep taking care of those little things. And absolutely, my expectation is to go to the playoffs. And I think they have the talent to do it. The talent just needs to keep growing. De'Aaron needs to get better. I think Buddy needs to get a little more efficient and better. I think he's been pressing a lot lately. You know, Marvin is still young, and he can get better. Giles can get better. So I expect this team to make a really good, serious playoff push, maybe get one more piece in there, decide what they want to do, if Willie's the future of center, or if they want to pull somebody out there to – kind of be a fail-safe, but let Marvin go and take over the center spot. A lot of big questions in the offseason, but I expect them to really compete for a playoff spot. They're there. They can compete with anybody.
Final thing for you, Troy. I've asked this to a couple other guests here on the Locked On Kings podcast, and I've asked a couple of my guests here today already for the Fans Only podcast. What would be at the top of your wish list, or if there was a number one thing that the Kings have to accomplish or have to get done this summer for you, what would it be?
Boy, because I don't know if there's any free agents that they can just pull in that's going to be a huge, big difference maker. So I just think make smart moves, you know. Like I said, they're going to have to make a decision on Willie. Are they going to go after another wing player that can really make a difference? If you look at the free agent pool out there, if you get past the Kawhis and Kevin Durant, and that'd be great if Kevin wants to come and join us and lead us to the next challenge of his career. But I don't think there's that huge superstar that's going to make a big difference. So I think just a couple of players around the edges and just really focus on another season of them getting better. I'd like to see the, you know, I don't know if I like Bogey and the starting small forward. I really like him off the bench. He's that Manu, do everything Swiss Army knife kind of guy. I think we've done better with him being that first guy off the bench to run the team. So, you know, I don't know what they'll do with the, you know, point guard situation, center situation. I think they're going to have to figure that out and see if they want another wing that can kind of make a difference. But I think there's some players that could definitely help them. Vlade's going to have a tough job and some hard decisions, but you keep that core together and keep letting them work, and I really do expect them to make another big jump next year. I don't know if it'll be a 50-win jump, but getting into the upper 40s would be a really nice season.
Absolutely. Real quick, though, you brought up Willie Cauley-Stein a couple of times, so I want to ask this just to wrap it up. What would you do, or where are you leaning towards what you would like to see the Kings do with Willie Cauley-Stein? I know he's such a polarizing figure here in Sacramento, frustrating for so many players. When he's on, he's very, very good, but most consider him not to be a part of the long-term future of this team with Giles and Bagley already here. What would you do if you were Vlade and you were the Kings for Willie Cauley-Stein this summer?
I think it would depend on the options that are out there. I think it would depend on where Willie's head is at. Because I do eventually think that Marvin will take over that center spot. and probably need, you know, and he needs to gain another year or two of muscle. But for me, for Willie, I don't know, because does he think he's a starting center for a perennial playoff team? I think Willie does some good things. I'm not down on Willie, and I know he's probably been the most talked about player for some frustrations. But I think Willie does a lot of things really well at an elite level. I think he actually rotates. Guys don't get by him on switches. So there's a lot of things. He's an elite rim runner. But there's also things he doesn't, you know, rebound as consistently as you'd like out of his area. He's not a shot blocker that we all thought he would be coming out of college. And he really kind of struggles in the half-court offense at times with, rushing and struggles to finish on layups. If they're not, you know, rim-running dunks that he gets, he really struggles in the offense sometimes. So I don't know. I think it really depends on the options that are out there in the league and what Vlade wants to do, and that's going to be a tough decision. So I can't answer that. I wouldn't be against having Willie back if he knew that, you know, he's going to be a key cog, but eventually he's going to have to turn the keys over to the young studs that are coming up.
Troy, you're the man. Thank you so much for taking the time to appear here on the Locked On Kings podcast, and for being a loyal listener to this podcast and a loyal fan for so many years since the Kings have come here to Sacramento. I truly admire that and look up to that. It's a privilege that you take the time to listen to me consistently, and I hope you enjoyed being able to come and actually be a part of this podcast today.
Very much so, and keep up the good work. Thanks, Matt.
It was an absolute pleasure having Ryan Miles and Troy on, and thank you to everybody who listened to them and took time to hear their opinions and maybe found some similarities with their own thoughts or their own stories from one of, if not all, of these three guys. If you want to be a part of a future Locked On Kings podcast, a fans-only podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, reach out to me via Twitter at MattGeorgeKHDK, or email is usually the best, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. That's S-A-C localmedia.com. Let me know you want to be a part of it. I will put you on the list. As long as people keep saying they want to be a part of this, I will keep doing it. Even if you have been on a fans-only podcast before, if you want to come back on and continue our conversation, or things have changed since we've last talked, let me know. I would be happy to have you back on and want to be able to speak with as many Kings fans here as I can. I'm very thankful for everybody that listens to this podcast, that takes the time to engage with this podcast and uses me and uses this podcast network as a source of Kings conversation and Kings news every single day. And hopefully this is a proper way to be able to return the favor a little bit and repay that love. I am like every single one of you. I grew up a diehard fan of this Kings team and then transitioned into a career in sports media, in sports radio, covering this team and discussing and talking about this team. But that doesn't make me better than my fellow fans that got me hooked on sports, hooked on the NBA, and hooked on the Sacramento Kings in the first place. I love this community. I love you people, and I'm so thankful that you come on and be a part of this podcast with me. I'm so thankful to be able to share the airwaves with guys like Ryan, Miles, and Troy, and I look forward to doing it again in the future. We will be back tomorrow for a preview of the Kings and Boston Celtics. Two more games on this road trip, a doubleheader, a tough doubleheader. Celtics tomorrow, and then you have the 76ers on Friday, so we'll discuss that and get back to normal here on Locked On Kings podcast coming tomorrow. Until then, my name is Matt George. Thank you so much for listening. This has been the Locked On Kings podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.